Just because a guy's a player's not a household name doesn't mean we can't make him a household name.
Hello, Colts fans. I'm Lawrence Owen, and this is Colts Law, a proud member of the Pulse Podcast Network. And TixBlix is the official ticket provider of the Pulse Podcast Network.
Have you been searching for the best ticket deals around? Well, look no further. With TixBlix, the price you see is the price you pay. And TixBlix just happens to have over $6 billion in ticket inventory just waiting for you. They absolutely mean it when they say every ticket, every venue, everywhere. And you can save even more with promo code PULSE in all caps to save you 5% off your total purchase. Just go to TixBlix.com and click the search bar. Search events based on your geographic location. Pick the show you want, and bam, it's showtime. Sporting events, Broadway shows, concerts, and more with TixBlix.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for the email newsletter so you can stay up to date on the latest news and savings with TixBlix. That's TixBlix.com, TixBlix.com. Every ticket, every venue, everywhere.
All right, welcome back. So today we're going to get down and gritty. We're going to break down the Frank Reich press conference that he had at the Combine just yesterday. So we're going to actually listen to what he has to say. I'm going to explain to you in detail exactly what he's saying and what he means by what he is saying. So let's go ahead and get started with this, all right? So the first thing we're going to break down is someone asked him what the difference was between this year and last year at this time.
Just like last year when Andrew was in the rehab stage, it was a kind of a collaborative effort with everyone with the same goal to try to help get him better and ready. Now we're just in a different phase of that, you know, continuing to grow and getting Jacoby involved in that and all of our quarterbacks just kind of, you know, develop a program together.
All right, so basically this time last year, Andrew Luck wasn't even really part of the team. He was still going through his rehab, and everybody knew that Jacoby Brissett was the guy that was most likely going to be leading the team with all the big throws and the first teamers, while Andrew was, you know, still trying to work back. This year is completely different. He is absolutely healthy, so him and Andrew and Jacoby can actually get together and make a plan and get better together on the offense, working together with the offense, so that they can be a whole lot further ahead this year than what they were last year when the season started, or even when preseason started. Because we all know it took Andrew, what, about two or three games at least to, you know, knock the rust off. And I mean regular season, because preseason didn't knock that rust off. He was sharp, but he ended up having to throw a whole bunch of passes in his first three games. And he didn't really have to do that if he was a little bit more sharp and a little more on edge and had a better game plan and had more chemistry with his receivers. So I'm looking at this as a very big positive, and perhaps we're going to see a more sharper Andrew Luck coming out that gate this year. Next, he explains pretty much why the Colts went from 1-5 and then began to start winning games.
You know, I felt like in some ways we came out and made some play, did some things that I think gave us hope early on, even though we weren't getting the wins. But I think we all could see we can move the chains, we could throw it, we could run it a little bit. But then we just gained confidence. And that was everybody, but it certainly was spearheaded by the way Andrew played, and he continued just to play winning football, really from the start all the way through, just continued to kind of lead us in getting better. And then defensively, it was the same thing. I just felt like defensively, it was this steady climb the whole year of us getting better.
Now, offensively, it was pretty much self-explanatory. Andrew Luck was throwing the ball well. He was pretty accurate, but it was all mostly short stuff. And we were trying to run the ball, but the offensive line wasn't exactly where we needed it to be. There had to be some tweaks. Also, you know, a bunch of new guys together, they had to kind of get gelling. And then the team meeting happened, and the offensive coordinators and Frank Reich and the players were together for a few games, and they started to understand each other and began to trust each other in the scheme. So they were able to start getting better and better and start winning these close games. And they just kept winning and winning and getting better and better as the year went on. And defensively, it was pretty much the same thing. Matt Eberflus came in ready to run this 4-3 defense with a bunch of players that, you know, haven't played together. These guys didn't know him. He didn't know them. They didn't understand the scheme. A few rookies, a few second-year players, people that haven't played with these other players or Matt Eberflus. And it took them time. It took them time to be able to understand the entire system, understand the players around them, so that they could be able to just play loose and fast and just go straight for the ball and do what they do best. Once they were able to do that, the game flowed much better for them. And defensively, the stats started to show. Now Reich is going to explain exactly his mentality for this year and what he's going to try to instill in the players and get them to have a mindset for this coming season after the success that they had last season.
And the tendency can be to kind of go through it faster the next time and skip through those other steps, just get to the end so you can get to the top. And I think we just have to be careful. You know, just because we made it pretty far, we accomplished a lot. We didn't get where we wanted to get to. But I think we have to take the same approach. Very methodical, very disciplined, focused on the process. Don't get caught up in, you know, putting, you know, expectations on how many wins or how far. Take the same approach that we did last year, just continue to get better.
So Reich just explained that he is not going to allow his players any kind of leeway just because they got into the playoffs and won a game. They're going to take the same mindset. They're not going to allow themselves to think, oh, we just need to get a couple key players in specific spots like Gregson did, you know, those years ago when he was here. He thought, oh, you know, we've made it to the playoffs. We just need some couple key players to get us over the top, get us to the Super Bowl. Reich and Ballard, is neither one of them have that mindset at all. Basically, they want to go in with the same methodical approach that they had last year, one game at a time, 1-0 every week, and they just want to get better every week. That way, when they do get to that point, they've gotten better every week through every game, and they're going to continue doing that this year. Pick up where they left off and just get better week to week. That way, by the time the end of the season comes, hopefully they get to the playoffs and they have became so much better than what they were when they got into playoffs last year that they'll be a whole year better and possibly have a better outcome. Reich next explains how this year feels so much different than what it did last year when he was a first-time head coach.
And then with the whole Andrew situation, there was nothing normal about it. It didn't seem like there was anything normal about it last year. This year feels very different, feels very good. I just can't even tell you how much I appreciate working with Chris and how much I learned from him. And for me, coming into that situation to work with someone like Chris, that was about as good as it could get for me. And the relationship and the trust that we've built, I think has been pretty special.
So when Reich came in last year, he was first-time head coach. He didn't have a starting quarterback. Ballard was a second-year GM. He had a bunch of players he'd never seen, never talked to. He had this scheme. He had this idea he wanted to work with. And it was just hectic for him. He didn't really know what was going to happen from day one to day two. But Ballard worked with him step for step. And he grew this really great relationship with Chris. And now that all that hard times is behind them. He and Balor together are finally going to start an off season with a normal way of doing things, with their top quarterback, with the scheme that most of the players are going to understand because they're not all thrown together new. So he feels a lot better about this season starting off than he did last season starting off. And then he's asked about Howard Mudd.
Yeah, having Howard back has been, it's been even better than I thought it was going to be. I was calling about something else, and we ended up on the phone for an hour, hour and a half talking football. And I got off the phone, and I was like, I was blown away. I mean, I was like, there's nothing, he hasn't changed. He's still as smart as he's ever been.
So, needless to say, Reich is incredibly impressed with Howard Mudd. He had a really high opinion of him back when he was an assistant quarterback coach with Peyton Manning. And once he got off the phone with him, he brought him back. And he still thinks he's just as sharp, just as good of a coach as he was back in those days. He's very, very excited. And we all should be, because back in those days, Peyton Manning never got hit. Our running game was really good. Now we can actually expect an even better offensive line than when we had Dave Guglielmo as the offensive line coach. Inevitably, after being asked about the offensive line and Howard Mudd, the questions turned to Marlon Mack and whether Frank Reich thought that Marlon Mack could be the running back going forward.
Absolutely. I mean, Marlon had an incredible season. I mean, you look at the production he had in the games, you know, not playing a full year. You know, it came out the beginning of the year, was hurt. And we just got so much better in the run game as the year went on. A lot of that was obviously started up front, but Marlon kind of hit a groove and was doing his thing. So we just look to continue to build that with Marlon.
So with that said, it's apparent to me that Frank Reich believes that Marlon Mack can be that guy and will be that guy moving forward and being the running back one of the Indianapolis Colts. As he said, they just kept getting better and better as the year went on. As Mack got healthier, as the offensive line got acquainted, they started to run better and better and better and better. Ending up, including playoffs, Marlon had 100-yard rushings in a game 5 different times. So I don't think it looks like Chris or Frank is actually looking to replace Mack anytime soon. I think they believe that the stable they have is doing a very good job and that they can only get better because they're so young. Obviously, there's things that they need to improve on, but they've shown that they can improve. Marlon Mack got a lot better at different things throughout the year that he wasn't so good at last year. It's a good assumption that Marlon's going to be able to improve on the bad things, like, you know, being able to catch the ball out of the backfield and stuff like that. And then after talking about the running backs, the obvious question of how important is it to get a new wide receiver to go opposite T.Y. Hilton came up. And his response was a little bit surprising to me.
We don't have to rush. Nobody has to panic. You know, we don't have to grasp for straws. We need to make a good, prudent decision. Because at the end of the day, even though we want to get better, as the coach who just, we just coach these guys, like, you, I think these guys all can play. I mean, they all can play winning football. As far as I'm concerned, we can come back with those same guys and be better this year than we were last, and we would be better. But the way we know, the way this league works, you get an opportunity to add people, and certainly we'll follow Chris's lead in that regard.
Is it me, or did it sound like Frank really didn't care if he got a new wide receiver or not? He pretty much said that he felt that through the experience that those wide receivers had last year and learning his system and just getting better and better, that they would actually be better off next year than they were this year. I don't know. I think some of those guys are a bit capped. They might get marginally better, but I don't think some of them will get extraordinarily better to where the offense is going to jump a bunch of spots and scare anyone. I think that they should get a wide receiver. They should be looking. Obviously, Chris Ballard is looking draft and in free agency. Frank did allude to that. Chris is going to get the opportunity to grab somebody, and hopefully it'll be someone who's explosive on the other side so they can exploit T.Y.'s and Ebron and Doyle and frankly, a great passing game opens up the running game as well, because it lessens the amount of 8-man boxes that Marlon Mack sees when he runs the football. So they continued to allude to the wide receivers and went to the draft for a question about how important drops are when evaluating.
I think it's a great question. I'm one who thinks I'm not afraid of a few drops, but if you use the word an inordinate amount of drops, I would be concerned, as you brought up, I would be concerned of an inordinate amount of drops, but I like to balance the drops with big play production. Sometimes there's some really big-time players who make a lot of plays who are going to have some drops. I think I can live with a few of those. You can't live with an inordinate amount. Then they have to come down the board.
The Colts were a top team in the NFL in drops last year, wide receivers and tight ends. So when evaluating a new receiver, I think it is incredibly important to make sure that the person that they are evaluating on the board has pretty good hands. As Wright explained, way too many drops during the evaluation process is going to be a red flag, because we don't want to continue the string that we had from last year. We want to be a little bit more sure-handed. But a drop or two here and there is not going to hurt anything. That's something a wide receiver can be coached up a little bit with his hands by showing, you know, position, how to attack the football, things of that nature. So Reich and Ballard are going to do the right thing in this situation when drafting a player. And if they have too many drops, they're going to drop them down the board, as Reich said. And they're going to look for someone who's actually pretty sure-handed. Doesn't matter if he has 4.3 speed or not. It has more to do with making sure that the ball sticks in the guy's hands and he can run a route pretty decent. And then he continues on from wide receivers to tight end and explains the benefit of having a bunch of good tight ends and a very strong stable in that position.
I think when you have more tight ends, there's some things you can do formationally to create extra gaps up front, you know, to give certain advantages in the run game. But then when you can complement that, when you have really athletic tight ends who can also be a threat in the pass game, so all of a sudden you're lined up in a formation that's giving you an advantage in the run game, and then boom, you shift out or motion, and now all of a sudden you got guys like Eric Ebron spread out, Jack Doyle, who's a great route runner and very productive player, and now all of a sudden they're spread out, and you got matchups on line, because now they've probably played base defense. You've probably limited their defensive calls a little bit when you get in a set like that. Now all of a sudden you can go from being tight to run it to spread them out when you have the right kind of guys who can handle that.
And this is why the Indianapolis Colts is in a very unique position compared to most teams in the NFL. They have an incredibly talented and deep tight end group. And they can go out there with three tight end set with a running back and a wide receiver, and the defense has to go base. They have to. Because if they go out there in a regular, like a nickel formation or a dime formation, when we've got three tight ends out there, we're going to run the ball right down their throats, because they're going to have a bunch of small guys. We're going to have a bunch of big guys. We're going to run it right down their throats. So they're going to go out there in your base defense, ready to protect against that run. And then we could spread out our tight ends. And next thing you know, you got Ebron and Doyle with linebackers on them, spread out, ready to run the routes. And the linebackers can't keep up with them. And as good as all of our tight ends actually are, I would not be surprised if Ballard, with one of his second round or third or fourth round picks, grabbed a tight end in this draft to make it even deeper. Because, you know, talent makes other talent better. And when you have four really good tight ends playing, what can a defense do against you? There isn't much, because it's a mismatch nightmare. It's now time to hear from my sponsors now. And don't forget, if you like what you hear, click the subscribe button and support my podcast. I'll be right back right after this.
And you would guess how I thought about Andrew's situation last year. I just trust players, you know, and I trust players and doctors, and they say, hey, yeah, there's a process to go through, but And the doctors are always going to be conservative, usually, right? I mean, they're going to give you a whole range, but be conservative. So at this point, we're pretty optimistic Jack will be ready to go. I also know as the flip side of that is even when a player is ready to go, it still takes a couple games for him to gain truly confidence back in himself as a player. I think we saw that. I've seen that with players all throughout my career. They come off of an injury, a procedure, come back. It takes two or three games. Oh, here they are. Now they're finally hitting their stride again. Probably the same thing with Andrew. I mean, he was good to start, but it just got better. You could tell he got more confident and better as the year went on.
So, welcome back. And as you just heard, Frank Reich is very confident in what the doctors and the players are telling him that Jack Doyle, and I'm assuming Deion Kane, because it's lumped in and just players in general, will be back when they say they'll be back, and they've both been expected back by training camp. He even said that never expect them the first couple games of the season to be on point, that they're still going to be a little rusty and need to get back into the game because they're still a little worried about getting hurt and they've been away from the game for so long. That even applied to Andrew Luck. As I had mentioned earlier, his first few games of the season, he wasn't really the Andrew Luck we remember. He was throwing shorter passes. He was a little quicker on the trigger because he was afraid of getting hit. And after he got a couple games in, he started to get more confident in his health and his shoulder and the injury that he'd went through, and started playing like he used to play, only better because now he understood the dynamic of getting the ball out faster and being more accurate and making better decisions. So he fully expects Jack Doyle and Deion Kane to be back and playing on time, but don't have high expectations early on. They're going to have to get back in their groove. Next, Reich talks about how the mindset of elite players on your team affects how the rest of the team view themselves.
Quentin, what he came in and did last year, you know, being the number six pick, being as great of a player as he was, but just the leader that he was. And even though here's this guy who has supreme confidence now, he's got supreme confidence, but yet he's just a team player at his heart. You know, deep down, he's a humble guy. He just wants what's best for the team, and he just wants to keep getting better. You know, the best players I've been around are guys like Quentin who never think they're good enough. I mean, you ask Quentin, he's not good enough. You know, you ask Andrew, he's not good enough. I got to get better. You just listen to those guys talk. That's what they all say. I got to get a lot better. And that is contagious. That's really when your best players are saying, man, I'm not even close to where I need to be. That's contagious, and I think that was a big part of what we did last year.
So as he was explaining, Quentin Nelson, Andrew Luck, guys of that nature who are elite, and they know they're elite, and yet at the same time, they know that they can get so much better, and they admit this, and they admit this openly. And when they do this, the rest of the team sees it, and they want to be able to have that same, it rubs off on them. You know, they have that same mindset. They want to go out there. They want to get better. They want to strive for excellence. No matter how good they are, no matter how good that stat sheet is. Darius Leonard, oh, I got 18 tackles. Well, I'm going to come back after not getting the Pro Bowl and let's get 40. Ha ha ha. But that's his mentality and that's what he's going to do. Through last year, they've seen through the first five games that they were not striving for excellence. They weren't playing to the best of ability, and leaders of the players had a team meeting, players only, and said, hey, this has got to stop. We can do better than this. We got to practice harder. We got to play harder. We got to be able to do better for our fans, for our coaches, for ourselves. And that rubs off and makes everyone play better. And this is exactly why the Colts went from 1-5 to end up 10-6 and into the playoffs. And this is also why the Colts are going to end up being much better next year than they were last year, because they're going to start the season off with that mentality. They're not going to allow any of the rookies to slouch when they come in. They're going to have that same mentality. Hey, you were top dog in your college days, but now you're in the pros, you're in the Colts, you're with all these great players who already, you know, have reached pinnacles, have made all pros and Pro Bowls, and yet they're still wanting to get better and better and better and better every single week. You're going to have to as well. And not just rookies, free agents as well. And, you know, they have to have that same mentality when they come in. And Reich was asked, why do you seem so confident that free agents are going to want to come to the Colts?
We have great ownership. I mean, you sit down and talk to Mr. Irsay, his commitment to this team, to this city, to do what it takes, his knowledge and passion for the game. Truly, one of the highlights for me has been the conversations I've had with him over the last year. I mean, this is a guy who knows every aspect of the game, has a long history with it, and he's for the players. You know, so if you're a free, he's for the players. He has your back. I think players know. I think our players know that our owner has their back. And I think that's huge. And then, you know, obviously we had a slow start, and then we got things rolling. And, you know, we're optimistic. We got a lot to prove. We got to get a lot better. But this is, you know, I think we're a team on the rise. I think we and the reason is we got the right players in the locker room. It's the right kind of culture, and that culture starts with the guys in that locker room. So it's not open to just anybody. That locker room is not just open to any great player. You got to be the right guy. You got to be the right player. You got to want to join the other players on this team on a mission that we're on to get up to the top of that mountain.
And Jim Irsay is definitely a big part of why we get the players and the coaches that we get, because he really does. He cares about his players and his coaches. Even the GM. You ask anyone, even Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee quit because he was absolutely disgusted with the brass and he got tired of being treated like crap. But he still has a ton of respect for Irsay and has said so multiple times on his podcasts. But he also touched on another thing, that just because he believes that we can bring in a lot of these big free agents, or just free agents in general, that it's not open to everybody. There is a kind of personality that they're accepting. And if you don't meet that kind of personality, then they don't want you on the team. They probably won't even call your agent, even though you're a big name player. I don't expect Bell. I don't expect Brown to be called, because they just have been, as of late, locker room problems. Bell pretty much just sat out because he felt as though he didn't get paid enough. Even though he could have played for a massive chunk, and in my opinion, he should have played, and probably a lot of other people's opinion, he should have played, and then at the end of the year, went for that contract from somebody else. But he was too worried about getting hurt during that year and not getting the massive contract that he thinks he deserves. Of course, you know, you don't want a wide receiver who might get in an argument with another one of your players and decide just not to show up one game. There are personalities that Ballard and Irsay and Reich are not going to even bother with talking to this free agency. And those are the personalities that are me first and not team first. So there are some actual free agents, or even players that aren't free agents, that could possibly be sought after, even though they have a very big personality, but they're not locker room problems, they're just personality. Like T.Y. Hilton, for instance. His personality is pretty well known throughout the NFL. A lot of the Colts fans actually kind of undermine his personality a little bit, but come on, man. Wearing a clown mask before a game into a stadium because someone called him a clown, that's personality things. He's also called out his offensive line for playing like crap the year before last, but then, of course, came back just a couple days later and apologized, said he shouldn't have brought that out. That should have been an in-locker thing where he talked to the players and the offensive linemen and everybody one-on-one and not had brought it out onto the media, and he was correct in saying that. With that being said, Frank Reich alludes here that he and Ballard might be actually looking at someone with a personality.
There's something that you just got to dig deep, and it's got to be a case-by-case deal. And the two things I think that are the common denominator are they really, truly deep down a team-first guy? We realize everybody has that selfish, we all have it, right? We all want to be the star, we all want to get credit and all that stuff, but you got to dig deep, and it's not, you can't just, you got to do your due diligence, and you got to dig deep and to make your best guess. And then that, and then do they have that mentality that, you know, guys, that we always talked about, hey, are they really fighting to get better? Do they love football? Or do they love football? We don't want guys who are just,
hey, let me sign the best deal. Obviously, we want him to get, players want to get the best deal. I get that. I want to get the best deal as well. But do you love football? Do you love practicing? Do you love being in the locker room? Those two things are really important. And so I think people deserve, you know, you can give somebody a second chance. You can get a personality who's unique, who's a huge personality, and he can still be the right guy.
Now, I don't know about you, but that right there, that got me a little bit excited, because that seems like they're going to go after someone big. They're going to go after someone that's got personality, but is a team-first player, obviously. He's said that over and over and over, team-first player. They want the money. They know they're good. They got personality, but it's team-first. It's not me, me, me. It's team, team, team. And in my opinion, one of those guys out there that is not me, 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 and is team, 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 there's rumors rolling around out there that OBJ is on the trade block. That's outstanding. If OBJ ends up on the Colts, Odell Beckham Jr. would make this offense outstanding. They would probably be, in my opinion, one of the top offenses in the NFL. Nearly unstoppable. They might even be better than what Kansas City was last year. Fact is, Odell's got that big, huge personality, very emotional. He does some things on the sidelines and games that people look at and go, what is wrong with him? But the fact is, he's just wanting to win. He's wanting to get better. He's wanting to be the best that he can be so that the guys around him can be the best they can be. He's never throwing any of his teammates under the bus. He might have had an argument or two with his coach, but he's never actually not shown up for a game. He's never just sat out a game or, you know, got on the media and been like, oh, this person sucks or this person sucks or I don't like how this guy does things. No, he is a team-first player, and he plays his butt off when he goes out there and plays. Now, that's just my opinion. That's what it sounds like. I'm going to go ahead and say that it could be somebody else, and it most likely is, because no one understands Ballard except for Ballard. I'm hoping the Colts somehow find a way to trade for Odell Beckham Jr. Maybe Brissett will be in that, because the Giants do kind of need a quarterback, in my opinion, and Brissett could be someone as like a bridge quarterback until they find a true franchise quarterback if Brissett doesn't grow into that. Because I think Brissett right now is better than Eli. That's just my opinion. If you don't agree with me, go ahead and send me a tweet letting me know that. But that's my opinion. I really do think that Brissett's better than Eli at this point in time. The fact is, as Frank said, no me, 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 and Bell was all me, me, me last year. That's why he didn't play at all. He wasn't. Brown was not very team first, because if he was team first, he would have showed up for the game to win, because, frankly, the playoffs were on the line, and he just walked off and didn't even play. That's crazy. How do you leave your team hanging when their playoffs is on the line just like you? That's nuts. You don't want a guy like that on your team, do you? Really? Come on. But I digress. I've spoken enough about Pittsburgh's troubled players. Let's go on to something a little more positive. In my opinion, I think there is a defensive tackle out there that would fit the Indianapolis Colts defensive line great. I don't think we're going to bring back Al Woods. I think Al Woods is going to be walking out there and looking in the free agency for a different team. John Clayton, however, was talking with Dan yesterday, and he said that Sheldon Richardson has not had any kind of locker room problems. Actually, the locker rooms of the last two teams since the Jets have been pretty solid, and he's been looked well upon. I guess he's gotten along with just about everybody. And that was his biggest problem in the first place. That's why the Jets let him go, because he got in arguments with people like Brandon Marshall, and that became pretty big over the media, and that's why the Jets let him go. And then he went over to Seattle and played and did pretty decent. Then he played for the Vikings last year and had a heck of a year. He's one of the best run-stopping players, you know, in football, period. And he's got a little bit of pass rush to him because he's really strong. I think a guy like that can get some inside push. If Hunt ends up leaving in free agency and we don't sign Al Woods, we need someone to fill that role that those two guys used to play. And I think Sheldon Richardson would be that perfect guy. John Clayton says right now his market value is around $8 million a year. That's outstanding. I would give him $8 million a year, no problem. Drop him a three-year, $24 million contract and say, come play with us. Well, I'll even give you half of it as a bonus up front. That'd be good for both sides. He gets a bunch of money up front, and the Colts, the next 2 years down that contract, isn't going to hurt him nearly as bad. I say go for it. Again, let me know in some comments or tweets or whatnot. Let me know what your thoughts about that is. I really like that idea, and I hope the Colts go for it. But we're going to find out in the next month, and after all that happens, we're going to come back and visit this and find out if I was right or not. So that's it for this podcast. My next podcast should come right after the Combine. I'm going to give my first little thoughts about these rookies that are coming in, and my plan is to have a special guest with me until I can find myself another co-host. I'm going to have somebody that knows a little bit about some of these rookies that are going to be at that Combine and help give all of you a little bit more information besides just me. More information on our opinions on what we saw and what we like and who we think the Colts might actually be interested in. Until then, you have a great week. But remember, when you're watching these rookies playing at the Combine, just because they run fast doesn't mean they're going to do great. Look at John Ross. Talk to you next Friday. Have a good one.